From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the third day of March 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk with Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson. She's in Champaign, Illinois. Dan Zwicker is a commodity classic and unavailable today. A bit later in the program, Gary Schnittke, Farm Management Specialist from the U of I, and the Farm Doc team will be here to talk about your crop insurance decisions. And as we close out the program, we'll hear from T. Storm and Mike Tenora. He'll take us through the agricultural weather forecast on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois. This quick reminder as we head into the 21st annual All-Day Ag Outlook meeting next Tuesday at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. It's sold out. We will not have day of event ticket sales. We thank you, of course, for your support of willag.org. And we look forward to seeing those of you with tickets on the 8th day of March. Remember, the doors open at 8 a.m. Eastern Time, no sooner. That's Eastern Time, 8 o'clock. Please plan your arrivals accordingly. There will be plenty of time to get all of you seated before the event begins. Our thanks to the agribusiness friends whose support makes the 2011 meeting possible, including AgriGold Hybrids, Archer Daniels Midland Company, Pioneer, The Andersons, Bates Commodities, Farm Credit Services, Risk Management Commodities, and Stewart Peterson.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Checking the numbers as they settled in Chicago on this Thursday afternoon. Futures from the hard red winter wheat pit were up 15 cents in the nearby March contract at $9.46.5. And the May futures up 11 at 9.51.5. Of course, that's in Kansas City for the hard red for the day. The soft red in Chicago at $7.90.5, up 13.75. July at 8.53, up 13.25. March corn at 7.29.75, up 15.75. The May at 7.36.75, up 15.25 cents. July corn at 7.40.25, up 15. December at 6.15.75, up 10.25. March beans today at $14.05, up 18.25. The May at $14.12, up 17.75. July $14.19, up 17.5. And the November beans at $13.62.5, up 16.75. The nearby livestock finished the live cattle futures April contract up $2 at $114.20. March feeders at $129.97.5, up 60 on the day, and the lean hogs at $88.80. finished 55 cents higher. You are listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil futures at $101.80 a barrel, down 43 cents. Ethanol at 258 and 3 tenths, that's 7 tenths lower. Natural gas at 378 and 2 tenths, down 3 6/10, and the heating oil or diesel fuel 0.9 cents lower at $3.04 8/10. The gold futures at $1,416 finished down $21.20, and the Dow now just about 205 points higher at 12,272. The dollar at 74.48 is down 0.18. The CRB index at 360.56 is up 1.44, and the S&P at 1331.05 is 22.61 higher on the afternoon.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area for this afternoon. Partly sunny skies, a high near 49. South-southeast winds at 11 to 14. Tonight, a 40% chance of showers. That after midnight, mostly cloudy, a low of 42. South winds between 9 and 11 miles an hour. And Friday, showers, possibly a thunderstorm or two. High near 57. South winds between 11 and 14 miles an hour. Friday, the chance of precip is 80% during the day. Friday night showers, a low of 40. North-northwest winds between 10 and 15. Chance of precip Friday night, 90%. We'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour and we talk with Mike Tenora. He's with tstorm.net. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker is at the Commodity Classic in a way today. In his stead, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson is with us to take a look at the commodity futures markets. Thanks, Jackie, for joining us on fairly short notice.
Well, thanks, Todd, for asking me.
Tell me about the marketplace and what you saw today. Was it encouraging?
Oh, there's no question it was encouraging. I think it started right out this morning with export sales. Corn had the fifth week in a row where we were above a million metric tons. You know, we haven't seen that since the end of 2007. Again, we saw Japan and Mexico being our biggest buyers. Wheat was disappointing, but the guesses for wheat were just gigantic at 1.4 million metric tons, so pretty hard for wheat to get to that level. I thought it was interesting to see beans kind of stomp the guesses and come in higher also. So in general, today, in contrast to yesterday, a much more positive day, even on the Libyan front.
Yeah, a far more positive day, and the marketplace managed to rally everything pretty sharply, 18 cents in the nearby beans. Corn futures were up 15 and three quarters. Wheat futures even gained 13 and three quarters. You think it's the start of another run up in the marketplace?
Well, I think that, you know, what we've seen in this particular market is a lot of, it's a really strong bull market, Todd. It goes up, it consolidates, it goes up, pulls back, goes up, consolidates, and basically I think that we're back at the top end of the consolidation range and looking to see if we can push through. You know, we'll see once on May. The contract high is 744 and a quarter. We need to push through that to be able to say that we're going to go up to the next level. But I believe we're consolidating at this level. Funds were strong buyers today. They bought 10,000 corn, 6,000 beans, and 4,000 wheat.
What will you be looking forward to in tonight's trade and as we end the week tomorrow?
Well, I'm going to look to see if we have the, you know, how tight the trade's going to be. I think that if we can finish the night tonight and be up at least two to four on corn and beans, I think we have a great opportunity to see this end up being a much better week than what it looked like it was going to be earlier on.
Yeah, take a look further out. What are the stumbling blocks for the marketplace in the next month? Weather could be good, I suppose. Then on the other side, you've got maybe drought that could lean out there, later planting season that could come if we have more rainfall. What are the things that you look forward to and that are fundamental to the marketplace and supply?
Well, I think when you look at the drivers for the marketplace, and if you're just talking fundamentals, that's one thing. Inform is certainly going to be a driver tomorrow because they'll come back in and we'll again look at acreage. Fundamentally, I think what the weather does down south, you know, early planting is getting underway down there, and they've been very, very dry. So that will be a determining factor maybe in some of the mix that they have down there. And I think when you look, USDA report out next week, well, we of course, have our Indiana-Illinois outlook, which has been a trend changer so very many times over the last number of years. So we have to get past that and into the USDA report. And the acreage report at the end of the month is going to be it's going to be key. I think that the first thing that was key to fundamentals or key to perhaps acreage mix was that 1349 on beans and 601 on corn. Beans have certainly improved the ratio. And so we'll be watching that very, very closely. But I think other than what you said, weather or a drought at this point in time or a full-fledged war someplace, which would be the most major thing that could happen. I think this market is going to continue to try and move itself sideways to higher until they really have some good, solid facts about what's going on out in the country.
Thank you so much, Jackie.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. Jackie Vakes with Stuart Peterson joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. You can hear her again if you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Dave Dickey is here now. He has all today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, a coalition of 90 business associations, taxpayer and hunger advocates, agricultural groups, environmental groups, and others asked Congress in a letter to let the volumetric ethanol excise tax credit expire when it sunsets at the end of the year. The groups also asked Congress not to fund infrastructure improvements for conventional biofuels such as corn ethanol. Some of the groups include the Grocery Manufacturers Association, Environmental Working Group, MoveOn.org, and the National Chicken Council. The letter from ethanol critics makes no mention of government subsidies to the oil industry. A DTN investigation last year found that the oil industry receives government supports that total between $133.2 billion and $280.8 billion, compared to about $17.9 billion a year to ethanol. The United Nations today says that global food prices hit a record high in February, warning that fresh oil price spikes and stockpiling by importers keen to head off popular unrest would hit already volatile cereal markets. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization's Food Price Index hit its second straight record last month, driven by rising grain costs and tighter supplies. Spiraling shipping costs for commodities threaten to drive food inflation even higher. The FAO, which measures monthly price changes for a food basket composed of cereals, oil seeds, dairy, meat, and sugar, averaged 236 points in February, the record in real and nominal terms, up 2.2% from January's record and rising for the eighth straight month. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from willag.org.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason in studio with us to talk about crop insurance decisions. Gary Schnitke is a farm management specialist with the Farm Doc team in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences here at the U of I. Gary, tell me first about the February month. It's set crop insurance pricing levels. What kind of impact do the high prices that came out of that month have on decisions and the crop insurance products?
The February month is used to set the projected prices based on settlement prices of the December contract for corn and November contract for soybeans. Those prices turned out to be $6.01 for corn and $13.49 for soybeans, and those are all-time high projected prices. The closest year was to these were 2008 when we had a $5.40 corn price. So we're on the corn price considerably above that, and that allows farmers to set some pretty high guarantee levels because the projected price along with the expected or APH yield and the coverage level determine the guarantees that these crop insurance products offer.
During the Farm Economics Summit meetings put on by the FarmDoc team in December, you showed a couple of PowerPoint slides that suggested at that time it would be possible to lock in a profit for the coming year just using crop insurance. Has that happened?
Yes. And in fact, the prices that we used putting together those slides were lower than they actually turned out to be. We were using prices in the low $5 at that point in time for corn. But, yeah, we can use the crop insurance guarantees and prices that are offered to set profit levels no matter what happens price-wise or yield-wise on most farms. The only situation where I see that wouldn't work is if we bid up cash rents very high on all acres that are farmed. But most farms haven't done that, so crop insurance can be used to set or guarantee profits this year, which is unusual.
Tell me about the individual products and how they differ from one to another and what producers have to look at this year?
This year, RMA introduced the combo product, and that replaced all our individual farm-level products. This year, farmers will have three farm-level products or options within the combo product. The first is revenue protection, or RP. Revenue protection is the replacement for CRC and RA harvest price. It's a revenue product with a guarantee increase, and it's using history as a guide, this is the product that most producers will use, will be RP. The second product is RP with exclusion, and RP with exclusion differs from RP in that its guarantee can't increase. If the harvest price turns out to be higher than the projected price, RP's guarantee increases, where RP with exclusion doesn't. RP with exclusion will be a good product for those individuals that don't do a lot of pre-harvest hedging. If you do some pre-harvest hedging, RP will likely be the preferred product. The final product is YP, or yield protection. It's a replacement for the old APH product, and it's a yield insurance. And yield insurance will be an appropriate product for those individuals that want to find or use some other means of giving themselves price protection. The other potential might be for livestock operations that need to guarantee themselves bushels, are more concerned with bushels than with revenue from acres.
And then the other product that most are familiar with is GRIP.
Yep, the other product is, in the county level products, is GRIP. And most people that have taken GRIP have taken GRIP, Group Risk Income Plan, with the harvest revenue option. There's also a GRIP without the harvest revenue option and GRP, which is a yield insurance. Most producers in Illinois have taken GRIP HR, the harvest revenue option, and I would suggest that would probably be the product that you should continue to take if you're going to take a group plan.
Should producers take crop insurance?
Yeah, most producers will find that the crop insurance to be of value. I mean, if the ones that would have to self-insure somehow. Again, I think this year, a couple reasons for looking at crop insurance or keeping crop insurance, even though we're at pretty high price levels, is one, you can guarantee a profit, which is very unusual. And so this is agriculture, and we could have price declines or yield shortfalls, and I don't know what would necessarily cause a $2-3 price decline, but those things happen. So given the opportunity, why not lock in a profit? The second reason is because of the SURE program, which is a disaster assistance program that's part of the 2008 Farm Bill. If you take crop insurance at an 80% coverage level or higher, you maximize the payments under SURE. And SURE is sort of a hit and miss sort of thing, but if it does make payments, it will make big payments. 2008, it made some payments in Illinois, and if you look at the price levels in 2008, they look a lot like 2011. So this could be the year that sets up for SURE payments again.
When the producer goes into the crop insurance agent's office, they will find some sticker shock. Yep. This year,
premiums on products have gone up for two reasons. One is the higher projected prices. Those increase the guarantees and also increase the premiums. The second reason is because price volatilities are higher this year. And those increase the premiums, and so we'll see higher premiums. Premiums on these products are 50% higher this year than they were last year.
And there is some variability within the counties as to what these cost.
Absolutely. and they vary across the state. And we have actually some maps that show that variability on the FarmDoc website. If you're concerned about premiums on the RP policy, think about the enterprise unit. An enterprise unit is all of one crop in a county. It will have lower premiums than the other basic and optional alternatives because less land means higher payments usually. But they'll find those enterprise units to be 70% lower in some cases than the basic and optional units. And that relationship varies across counties in Illinois. So think about that enterprise unit. There also is a whole farm unit, which combines all of corn and soybeans in the county. And if you're really concerned about premiums and want to lower those while still maintaining eligibility for sure and giving yourself a revenue guarantee, the whole farm unit will be roughly half the cost of an enterprise unit and will provide a guarantee. And just to give you a feel here, a RP policy will have at an 80% level something between a $10 and $15 premium per acre for corn across many counties in Illinois, northern and central Illinois. The basic and optional criteria or option unit will have a $30 premium, so it's double. If you go from RP basic unit down to RP enterprise unit, 80%, you go from 30 to 15, and the RP at 85% has a $24 premium in the county that we were looking at, which was Macon County. So you can go from a basic and optional unit down to an enterprise unit and up the coverage level, and that will provide better price protection overall. So that's an alternative to look at as well.
Finally, what kind of tools are available on the FarmDoc website for producers to use and answer some of the questions that they have before they actually go see their agents?
Yep, we have on our FarmDoc website some 4 on-demand webinars, which will go over the combo product, over in detail, Grip HR in detail, enterprise units and what they mean in detail. And finally, some suggestions for risk management and crop insurance in 2011. So those webinars are on our website. There's 3 sets of tools on the website as well, and that's the crop insurance section. One is an online premium calculator. The second is online premium or payment evaluator, where we look at the risk and returns associated with different crop insurance alternatives. And the final one is a downloadable spreadsheet that looks at what if and calculates crop insurance premiums. We also have documentation describing or papers describing crop insurance alternatives on that website. And that's a crop insurance section of FarmDoc.
Gary, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Gary Schnittke is a farm management specialist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can read more from him on the FarmDoc website and use the tools that are there. The address is www.farmdoc.illinois.edu. Again, that's www.farmdoc.illinois.edu. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers. Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
It's National Mulled Wine Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1709, Andreas Margraf was born. A German chemist in 1747, he extracted sugar from the sugar beet and determined it was identical to cane sugar. But it was not for almost another century, in 1802, that the first beet sugar refinery would be built. In 1797, the first patent for a washing machine was issued to Nathaniel Briggs. In 1879, Elmer McCollum was born, an American biochemist. He originated the letter system of naming vitamins. He discovered vitamins A and B, and he worked with others on vitamin D. He also researched how certain minerals were important as nutrients, including calcium, phosphorus, manganese, and zinc. Also in 1879, the U.S. Geological Survey was founded by an act of Congress to classify public lands, their geological structures, mineral resources, and products. The first survey actually funded by Congress came some 50 years earlier, examining the land between the Missouri and Red Rivers. And in 1892, the first tuberculosis test on cattle in the U.S. was conducted by Dr. Leonard Pearson, the dean of the veterinary department at the University of Pennsylvania. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us is Mike Tenora. He's with T-Storm out of Chicago, Illinois. Thanks, Mike, for taking the time and for filling in for Pete Levitt, who's out of the office this afternoon. Tell me about what you see in the United States. There are several things, I think, that might be afoot.
Yeah, there are several things taking place, and most of them are happening with wheat right now. We have one area of pretty significant dryness from southwest Kansas and southward into Texas, and this area has been fairly dry over the last 3 to 6 months, and in absolute terms, they're only around 1 to 3 inches drier than usual, so not a huge amount. That's over the last 180 days, but in terms of percent, that's around maybe only 33% of average rainfall during that time, so they need some rain there. But all it will take is one big rain out in the southern plains over the next 3 to 4 weeks, and that will alleviate the dryness problem that exists for around half of the hard red winter wheat belt. So that's kind of the first area we're thinking about. The second one is further to the north in the northern plains, especially across North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana, and then even into the Canada prairies. They've had a very snowy winter, and deep snowpack exists right now. On top of that, it looks like a major snowstorm will move across at least South Dakota early next week. That'll add 6 to 12 inches to their snowpack, bringing snowpack over 18 to 24 inches in some parts of those states. So that needs to melt, because what's going to happen here over the next few weeks is that it will melt. It will leave the topsoil and the subsoil saturated, and then you'll need to dry in April in order to get planting of spring wheat off to a good start later in April and into May. So even though that's still 6 to 8 weeks away, it is something we're thinking about just because of the amount of snow that's out there right now.
And then there's one more item that you were thinking in the United States that we needed to watch, and what was that?
Yeah, the other area is the soft red winter wheat belt, you know, extending from the eastern corn belt, including parts of central and southern Illinois, and then into the Delta. Heavy rain over the next couple of days, and then again early next week, leave some areas flooded, but it's still dormant, so there is time for recovery there, and we're not really thinking about too many problems with that crop.
I'm sure you get asked this question fairly often because of the short supply of corn and of soybeans in the United States as far as ending stocks in the old crop go. Have you taken a look at what the potentials for the coming year might be?
Well, we've been researching that issue as we do every spring, and our conclusion at the moment is that the chance for a 1988 or 1934 or 1936 type drought is fairly low for this growing season, which is always good news. And you should keep in mind the chance is always low because we've only had a few of these huge droughts over the last 100 years. But right now we have a La Nina in place, and it is most likely to weaken at least slightly over the next few months and into the summer. And if that occurs, it would be most similar to what occurred in 1985 and 1989. Those years were mixed for wheat. We had one bad year, especially 1989, But for corn, those yields were near trend to much above trend. I believe the yield in 1985 would have been close to 167 bushels per acre at the national level. So in that regard, it's good because it doesn't look like the chance for a huge drought is higher than usual. The soybean crop in those years was mixed, but generally near trend. So you just have to watch it and see what happens.
That's Mike Tenura from TStorm.net in Chicago. This has been the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.